Welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, coming at you across the web with the most exciting interviews and the best in Ohio State football and basketball coverage. Here's your host, Joe Dexter.
What is up, Buckeye Nation? Hello and welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, the show that loves nothing better than seeing the enemy maced in the face, embarrassed in a stadium named Beaver, and the bye week is gone. Iowa is here, another test in many different ways for the undefeated Buckeyes. Joe Dexter and Claire Crawford. Claire, I imagine it's safe to say all is well in Happy Valley for the Ace of Mace, but how are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. Anytime that you see a guy in a picture maced in the face with a Michigan Wolverine uniform, you can't be bad.
It looks so painful, too. I just want to know what he said or did to make them want to go that far. I mean, that place is a madhouse.
See,
for him to get maced.
To me, all he had to say was go Wolverines, but you
know. For him to wear the that color, those colors, is just a crime enough.
Have you ever, at any game that you've been to, have you ever seen anything close to that?
No, never. Never. I've been to professional games that haven't been that crazy. I don't know what was, and he had to have been intoxicated, at the very least. But like you said, even if he wasn't, he was a Michigan fan, so he deserved it.
The thing that's crazy about it is you looking back at it, and not knowing it at the time, but four overtimes, losing to Penn State, and then you realized, oh, man, I just got maced in the face. I'm probably sitting in the drunk tank for a night, if not till Monday, in,
oh, yeah,
in Pennsylvania, of all places.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there are so many jokes I have that I'm going to have to keep to myself right now. But I think, you know, it's a really bad day when you can say the worst thing that happened to me was getting maced in the face. Second was my team losing in Happy Valley. You know, I have a coworker that's a Michigan fan, and he's the best kind of Michigan fan. And I say the best kind, I really mean the worst kind, because, you know, of course I had to rub it in his face as soon as I saw him on Monday morning. And he's like, I don't even care anymore. I mean, they're one loss down. He's like, I give up. I don't even care anymore. We're horrible. And he thinks the mace was deserved. So those are my favorite kind of Michigan fans. Typical.
Typical, you know. Hey, I'm not saying that I wouldn't go crazy if the Buckeyes lost, like, say, to Iowa on Saturday, but I don't think I'd do anything mace-worthy.
I hope not.
I would like to think I wouldn't do anything, especially since I'm in the state of Michigan. That would be dangerous.
Oh, gosh, I know. I'll come bail you out of the pokey, though, if you
do. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, you can't bail out some folks from some crazy actions as we talk college football and get you ready for Iowa on Saturday. One of the stories hitting the news, it's not new, but it's kind of been pulled out there. Western Kentucky's coaching staff, they like to use a lot of things to pump up their players, per se. And Bobby Petrino is at it again. You can say Bobby Petrino's at it again, but it's his strength and conditioning coaches using ping pong paddles on their heads to pump up their players, breaking paddles over their heads, breaking whipping sticks over other coaches' backs. This is crazy.
He's going to start, like, Bobby Petrino is just, like, one day just going to show up to practice with a gag ball, I think. I'm really worried about these kids.
I don't get it. You're in Western Kentucky.
True.
I don't know what the what is so great about this, but they've been doing it in West Virginia with Petrino. I don't know if it was in Arkansas, but in Marshall, and now at Western Kentucky. You think the strength and conditioning coaches at Ohio State would want to pull that one and say, hey, guys, let's try this one?
No, I definitely know. Coach Mariotti and Coach Schlegel helping out there, I don't think they have to lean into gimmicks, we'll say, to get their guys pumped up. And if your guys aren't pumped up to play football and play college football and play college football at the Ohio State University, then there's a bigger problem there. Maybe they have to pull this stuff at Western Kentucky, but at the Ohio State, if they're not pumped up, they get sent to the back of the line. We'll put another thoroughbred in the stall.
That's exactly it. It's we don't need those type of gimmicks. That's the thing that's funny about it. And you know what it reminds me of? that video that we passed through the email with the super jock.
He started following me on Twitter.
Oh, did he really?
He did. I'm all about this guy. He's actually really, really funny. He's a professional wrestler.
This guy, we'll link it in the podcast notes, but
awesome.
This guy is great. But the thing that reminds me, I think these guys still want to play football. The best they can do is crack ping pong paddles over their head.
There's going to be some, like, the NCAA is crazy. The NCAA is so crazy that they allow that kind of stuff to happen, but you can't get a free car wash.
Right. I was just going to say the same exact
thing. From a fire hose.
Yeah. These guys can't wash their cars, but they can crack ping pong paddles over their heads. So. I wonder, do you think we'll hear anything from the NCAA about this, or since it's kind of went more public, that these guys will calm it down, or does it go the other way? These guys now got to up the ante a little bit.
Right, maybe so. Maybe they have to outdo themselves.
They got a lot to do, though, because in Marshall, they lit a stick on fire and then whipped somebody in the back with it. What else do you do? You juggle knives? Like, I don't get what you do
Illuminati?
Next.
Illuminati? Like, what is...
What is going on? Oh, man. Who knows? Maybe it's their type of... that's how they want to get a following. You got to do something.
I don't know.
Moving on from ping pong paddle whipping to playoff college football.
Nice segue, Joe.
It's been announced. We haven't been on. We weren't on last week, but it has been announced the committee that will be selected to select playoff teams. The four teams that will be selected every single year on that group: Condoleezza Rice, former head coach of Notre Dame and Washington, Tyrone Willingham. Also on the list is Dan Rakovich, Oliver Luck, Archie Manning, two former good Wisconsin coaches, and Barry Alvarez alongside Tom Osborne of Nebraska, and Alvarez, of course, with Wisconsin. Your thoughts overall on the committee that was selected?
It sounds like just a complete who's who, like Mount Rushmore of football knowledge. Apparently, Condoleezza Rice is a huge, huge football fan. There's even like a commercial about it. I think the NFL puts it out about Condoleezza Rice and her football experience, and there are a couple others, but those are some really respected members of the college football and football community in general. So I don't know how they get elected as far as, like, their terms and things like that. But when there are humans involved, everything is going to be kind of skewed a little bit. But sometimes we need the humans, because I think the BCS computers are run by chimps.
There's a lot of names in this involved that are around everything in college football, like, for example, Oliver Luck, the AD at West Virginia, Pat Hayden, the AD at USC. Barry Alvarez has been pretty much putting out the picket out and campaigning for this position for a couple years. And Tom Osborne, definitely a political name. And Tyrone Willingham has worked with the BCS before, another political name. And then you throw Condi Rice in the mix. It's really interesting to see that political mix when it comes to selecting teams. Is it going to get political?
It is, and I don't like having it. I like having the separation of, forgive me, but church and state, but I like the separation. I don't like my politics and my sports, and it's become more, the politics has penetrated sports more and more and more and more, but it's almost because the NCAA, there's no system of checks and balances with the NCAA, to use another political term. So they had to kind of go the other way and build a political kind of governmental type situation in order to balance it out, I think, for now. But I don't like, in general, my politics creeping into my sports, my safe place.
Now, everybody knows the committee will be responsible for selecting the four teams that advance to the college football playoff. Beginning and after the 2014 regular season, they'll also rank and place the at-large teams that maybe are undefeated with one loss that are in those non-contract New Year's Day bowls, the Cotton Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, and Chick-fil-A Bowl. So there's more to it than just selecting those four teams, but it begs the question, just taking a look at this year's teams, there's eight teams undefeated right now that are really in the race that could be in the national championship. Are we going to see eight teams down the line?
I hope not.
No, you're opposite of me. I really would like to see eight teams.
You think so? Really?
Yeah, here's my reason. It's four games of football. And four games of playoff football, to me, it makes a tougher challenge for some teams to make it to that championship game. But to see four college football playoff games would be something. Take, for example, this year. I would like to see a team like Oregon and a team like Baylor and a team like Clemson and even Ohio State, throw them teams in the mix that really still need to get to that proving point that they belong in a national championship game. If you have to play two playoff games compared to just one in a championship, I think that can show who the better champion is. But, hey, we can't be complaining. There's going to be a playoff at least.
It really has been needed. So, I mean, again, we can't complain. The reason I just am not, I'm thinking more of the student-athlete side, and football is so different from basketball, and again, I'm a basketball fan, you're a basketball fan. Football is such a violent sport, which is part of the reason I like it, but they are already stretched so, so thin at the end of the season. I think adding those extra games would be pretty tough, but what do I know?
That's one of the points to look at, and that is one of the negative sides of it, and I'd agree with you. It would be tough to add that many more games to the schedule for some of these teams. But if you do take a break like you do for these BCS Bowls where you're taking off a month or two, it might help a little bit, but still there is some concern there. The question for me, though, is if you had to pick right now four teams to be in the playoff this year, it'd be an interesting selection. I think automatically, at least to me, Alabama and Oregon would be in that mix.
Yeah, no question, those top two, at least.
And then you've got the likes of Baylor, Clemson, Ohio State, Florida State, Louisville. I think even looking at it, Ohio State and Louisville might be behind Florida State and Clemson just simply by them being in the ACC this season.
Yeah, in the Big Ten. Although I think very highly of Clemson this year. I really like what they're doing and how they're playing. And they're getting a lot of national attention for it, which would not normally happen up there. I still think the jury is still out with me for Baylor and Florida State, but I think those matchups that you were mentioning would be awesome to see an old school Ohio State, Alabama, or kind of a newer rivalry since we faced them before with Oregon and Ohio State. That would be really cool. Another old school matchup would be Ohio State and Florida State. So any of those teams facing our Buckeyes would be awesome to see. I think ratings wise, I think something like Baylor or Clemson might not get the pull, but you know, again, that's just looking from the business side.
That's the thing that's cool about the playoffs that I'm really excited about is a lot of people are talking about last week after Baylor got a win over West Virginia and they continue to roll this week, but the talk was, okay, what's it going to take to get an Oregon-Baylor national championship? We might be able to see now an Oregon-Baylor semifinal. That might be unbelievable if it were to start this year, but it's not going to. But that's the point that's exciting about it.
It really is. And it's, you never know how these kids will play differently and how the coaches will coach differently because of it. And it would be really, really interesting. Like you said, it's needed to happen for a long time now. So it's a relief.
Now when I look at it, too, one of the things I've been talking about with friends this week and looking at the playoffs and all that good jazz, one thing that's really going to matter is coaching staffs and having not only just a good head coach, but with these types of different game plans for teams you haven't seen all year, you're definitely going to need a good coaching staff.
And I mentioned it earlier, not to be a homer, but I'm just so proud of Urban Meyer and his staff and what they've been able to accomplish so far. But I talked about how well Urban Meyer has done after a bye week. And I think it really just speaks, obviously, to his coaching, but getting his players ready mentally and physically. And Coach Meyer's bowl record is also very good because of this, because of that long break, like you mentioned before. I think it's really easy to let the kids kind of have their vacation and spend time with their families on Thanksgiving and Christmas and have too many In-N-Out burgers, and it would be really easy to let them go and get sloppy. And I think Coach Meyer has done a great job with keeping their heads mentally in the game, which will be huge against Iowa, and we'll talk about that later too.
We'll talk about that. Let's talk the bye week, and coming up later, we'll talk to Steve Batterson with the Quad City Times to get you up to date on the Iowa Hawkeyes 3:30 on Saturday. We'll break that down a little bit later. But let's talk about that bye week. Urban Meyer gets some time off. He got to watch some volleyball, he said. His two daughters playing volleyball. And then the one thing he did mention is he did watch some full football, and he did watch Michigan and Penn State. Looking down at the schedule for Ohio State, I think it was imperative that he watch that full game.
I think so, too, and I'm surprised he admitted it, but he's a brilliant man. And speaking of politicians, he's no Senator Sweater Vest, but he is smart enough to know that he is going to have to start campaigning for his team, unfortunately. As much and as impressive as this offense has been, he's going to have to start toughing up his team to the media. And it's, again, it's about a balance of not letting your team hear that and assume that they're bigger than they really are, and putting that out there to the media, like, we compete with everybody. We're right there with everybody else.
That's definitely
how difficult that has to be.
It's definitely going to be interesting to see where they fit down the line, but Coach also announcing the offensive champions and such from the Northwestern game with the bye week. One of the players that really had a good game was Bradley Roby, not necessarily in the secondary, but on that special teams. Hey, Claire, they got a special teams play. I know you've been looking for it forever.
You know I've been calling for it forever. It's about dang time.
It was a huge play. He blocked the punt and then recovered it for the touchdown in the biggest backdoor cover. You didn't have any money on that game, did you?
No, sir.
Good.
No, sir.
Good to know. Good to know. We want to keep you around here. We definitely want to keep you around here. So.
True. No, I wouldn't. And I'm proud that Bradley Roby stepped up. He needed to.
Some of the offensive champions: Marcus Hall, Andrew Norwell, Jeff Heuermann, Evan Spencer, Devin Smith, and Philly Brown. You look at those receivers, they did step up in that game, but I think one thing that you take from it, despite Braxton struggling so much against Northwestern when it came to decisions, it seemed at times he still had plenty of time to throw the football or make a decision.
He did. That's not his, that's nothing he did special as far as, you know, having time to throw the ball and make a decision. That O-line play, you know that. The only thing I was concerned about with Braxton is, and I mentioned it earlier in the Silver Bowl points this week in our blog, that he just seemed tentative to me. He seemed like he was just kind of putting too much thought into a run. He didn't seem like he was full speed. So I don't know if he's still kind of thinking about his injury, or I think what happens is when Braxton has been conditioned to think don't run first, because that was his natural instinct for so long. And when it does take over, when his natural instinct takes over and he runs, you can see it's a more fluid process. You can almost watch the thought in his head happen when a play breaks down for him to go ahead and run. And I think he's uncomfortable still when a play breaks down. If a play is broken, he starts to kind of second guess himself. So I think that's going to take some adjusting, and maybe that's what it is. Coach Meyer said he's 100% for this coming week, so I'm not in Braxton's head.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. My thoughts with Braxton was, I think that every single junior quarterback, when they have one of those games, it just seems like no matter who the junior is, they have a game where something just doesn't flow right. Maybe it reminded me a lot of that 7-6 Michigan State game,
mm-hmm.
where it just things weren't clicking. The decisions weren't there for him to make, maybe, or maybe he just couldn't make the decisions. Just wasn't his game.
Yeah. And I don't think it was anything having to do with being rusty, because obviously he had played very well the previous week. I don't think it had anything to do with that, but I think it's something going on with him, just maybe having that game. Let's hope it's just that one game.
That's what I'm hoping.
And I heard that Kenny Guyton was warming up on the sideline, and that Coach Meyer kind of alluded to the fact that it may have been just to see how Braxton would react. And Braxton took the bait and reacted exactly how Coach Meyer wanted him to.
See, that's what I don't think the average fan understands. I think they thought he was thinking about putting him in. Yeah. Me personally, I don't think he was ever coming into that ball game unless Braxton made a mistake maybe on the next drive, but I even doubt it then. I think it was just a tool, and it worked out well, like you mentioned. But how many of your friends or the fans out there did you hear from saying that Kenny Guyton should have gotten the game?
A lot of them. We were on the live chat for our blog.
Oh, geez.
Anybody out there listening?
Oh, boy.
It is a trip. Sometimes I want to just really
breathe.
Throw a few choice words in there. Thank you, breathe. But it really is a lot of fun to hear everybody else's opinions live. So anybody that wants to come on the live chat on Saturdays, we completely welcome. And even Iowa fans, especially Iowa fans, we welcome them in there because they're not partial like we are. But during the live chat, it seemed like a lot of people jumped on the Kenny G, Smooth Kenny G bandwagon as soon as they heard he was warming up, or anytime Braxton, you know, turns over the ball or makes a mistake. And I just think it's a mistake to do that. The quarterback position is all about being in a rhythm, and so much of it is in your head that it would be a huge mistake to take him out. And I think it would have done more damage to his psyche than letting him go in and finish a bad game.
Here's my prediction, Claire.
Uh-oh.
Smooth Kenny G will be playing on Saturday once Braxton Miller exits the game because he did so well. That's I just see this possibly happening against Iowa, but I'm with you. It was a great move by Urban Meyer to get him fired up on the sidelines, getting throwing the ball a little bit, let Braxton know, hey, we got to go to Kenny G if something doesn't happen here. It shows to me the leadership ability too, not only just of Kenny G but number five as well.
Yes, sir. The fact that he stepped up and it gives him that fire in his belly, like, this is my spot and no one is taking it from me. And I hope that's what he was thinking the entire recovery process. Obviously, we knew he was injured. We knew he was hurt. And with all the media hype of Kenny G and Kenny Guyton to say that he should be the starting quarterback, and all, much love goes to Kenny Guyton. He could really start many, many, many places around the country. We're very, very lucky to have him there at Ohio State. But even as a tool to get Braxton to fire up, fine. And he responded exactly how Coach Meyer wanted him to.
Well, one of the questions, Claire, going into the season was leadership, and I think Urban Meyer addressed that after the bye week, after the 40-30 win over Northwestern. He said, hey, we're not where we need to be yet, but we've done a very nice job with chemistry, good alignment, good leadership on the field. But, hey, we're only halfway there. We're only through the first half of the season. I think the leadership is where it needs to be at this point, and I think it continues to grow.
I think so, too. It sounded like Coach Meyer was kind of worried about what the leadership was going to be like in the spring, and his guys that the team is actually selected to be their leaders have really stepped up. And so it sounds like he's really excited about where it's headed, and I think the 12-0 bunch was really special to him. And especially because I don't think anyone thought that they would be 12-0. And it was just a group of really, really hardworking guys. And so hopefully this group can live up to his very, very high expectations. Anytime you have good leadership like that, everything else is going to fall into place. When they can keep themselves accountable, it makes your job as a coach a lot easier, I'm assuming.
Let's take a look at the depth chart heading out of the bye week. Some changes. Carlos Hyde will move to first on the running back chart as Jordan Hall and Rod Smith will be right behind him at number two.
You know, I love me some El Guapo.
Here's the thing, man. My respect for this guy jumped up about four rings over the bye week after Northwestern. Did you see his press conference?
I did not get to see it, but I've had a friend of mine told me that he was almost in tears.
Yeah, he literally had to stop talking because he would have broke down, literally, not just tears. He would have broke down about the whole suspension thing and getting a chance to play and getting a chance to prove himself. I don't know about you, but when it comes to athletics, I just love seeing guys like that that get a second chance and understand what that second chance is and not only just take advantage of it, but relish it on the field and off.
I'm so glad that he got the opportunity to do so, and I'm really glad that Coach Meyer and his staff were patient with the process. I'm glad that he was initially partially punished for just kind of the thought of anything inappropriate going on with any sort of violence towards women, but I know that Carlos is a good man, and I know that he would never do anything like that. And I'm so glad that he was able to prove that not only he belonged to be a part of that team, but he belonged to be a starter again. And then for him to go and prove it on the field has to be a very good feeling for Carlos. It has to be almost a sense of relief. As long as he keeps trucking and keeps that in his head, then he's going to be very successful.
You know, I'm just talking as a pundit and a fan right now, but going into the season, for a senior, I didn't think maybe that the leadership was there for Carlos Hyde, but seeing him admit his mistake and just being, you don't understand it until you see it, when you see a guy break down because he realizes he missed three chances to take the field. That is unbelievable to me, and I think one thing I'm thinking, and I'm not in the locker room, I don't understand, but I think Carlos Hyde goes from maybe an outside leader to one of the big leaders on this team by the end of the season.
I hope so. I hope so just for Carlos, and I'm sure it would be great for the team too. But you're right. You kind of never know what goes on there. Unless you're in the locker room, you really don't
know,
you know, how people feel about each other.
The one thing that I know, though, is that there's a kid that's a senior, number 34. He's 6 foot, 235, and he ran over some Wildcats. That's all I know.
Yeah, he did. He sure did. He's a stud.
He's a beast, and I'm predicting a big game against Iowa again. Iowa coming up this Saturday at 3:30 p.m., a big game for Ohio State, and I think one thing that the Buckeyes need to do early is establish the run game, and Carlos Hyde will be a huge part of that. The only Division I team that hasn't given up a rushing touchdown this season is Iowa. They've got an interesting defensive front with some really good linebackers. I think Carlos Hyde, if he punches it in early, man, that's just a punch in the face.
I really hope that happens. Just to be really simple about it, I really hope that happens. And I think it would set such an awesome tone. And I think the fans would go nuts, and It would be great for Ohio State, and I'm sure that they realize that, and I'm sure that the coaches have talked to them about it. It would be so great. How they're going to set it up is going to be the interesting part.
That is the interesting part, and you talk about one-dimensional football. At times against Northwestern, it had to be one-dimensional Carlos Hyde taking over. In this instance, I would take that one-dimensional over a one-dimensional playmaker like Braxton Miller trying to run over the field with his head cut off trying to make a play when you've got something that's guaranteed in Carlos Hyde that can carry the rock, hold on to the rock, and get 3 yards here, 3 yards there.
If it's working, if it ain't broke, baby, go ahead. I mean, all day. If you're going to find a hot route or you're going to find a hole that's happening all day, then by all means, do it. I mean, everybody's on scholarship. Take advantage of it. Go, go, go. That's fine with me. I know Coach Freckle was really all about being a balanced team, and I know every coach has the intention of going in and having a balanced offensive attack, but I know that they're all going to say, if that's working, then go for it.
It's funny you bring up Jim Tressel, because I think we might get a Jim Tressel ball game.
You think so?
Well, I know we're getting it from Kirk Ferentz, that's for sure.
Well, you're right. This is true. I mean, I think I want to say that they were top 10 scoring defense, too, so as long as we have good they're hanging on to the football. Please hang on to the football. If any Buckeyes are listening, please hang on to the football.
I saw a tweet the other day from Pete Burks, who writes for SB Nation. He put, Kirk Ferentz's wife sews punt into the tag of all of his undershirts and underwear. If it's not sewed in, Claire, it's written in Sharpie, at least. I'll tell you that much, because this guy would punt from the 30-yard line in Buckeye territory.
He sure would. Poor guy. And I am positive Kirk Ferentz is only there because he has, like, the best contract in college football.
It's a nice one. I think he gets – it's $3.5 million a year.
Yeah. I think they signed him for another, like, 10 years. It wasn't last year, but the year before, I think. It shocks me.
He was a 104-76 in school history, 15th year. After 2009, it was 11-2 season.
Yeah.
They decided to elevate that contract. He signed through 2020.
Wow.
I can only think off my head of one coach that signed through 2020, and that's Mac Brown. We're seeing how that one's working out. Hey, you got a win,
right.
But we're seeing how that's working out.
He did get a win.
I love Mac Brown.
I really do. I love Mac Brown. I'm so glad you feel the same way.
I'm not feeling the same way about Kirk Ferentz. I love the fact that there's a mediocre coach getting overpaid to coach a team in the Big Ten that Ohio State might face here every once in a while. I'm not a problem with that, but $3.75 million it is per year. That's according to Hawk Central and Ken writing that in our preview at thebuckeyebattlecry.com. Check that out. The interesting thing about Kirk is the game that he brings. I wonder if that draws out of the Ohio State game plan of, hey, you want to play that type of game? We can do it too, but we're going to do it three times better.
I hope so too. I really do. I don't know. Our offense is so complex this year.
It's Hyde and Jekyll sometimes.
Right. It really is. There are so many ways for Ohio State to attack this defense. I'll be really excited if they can punch some holes in it.
That's one thing that I'm looking at this trestle ball type idea. If you can get that consistent type of offense, I'd be happy with that at the point of the season. When you're trying to pick up wins, it's not trying about being pretty. It's about picking up wins.
Yeah, but then that leans back to what the national attention is. I mean, obviously, they need to have a W, and I know the coaches don't care how they get it. They want the W, but it's still, you know, the national media attention. If they don't put up a whole bunch of points, they're not going to see that Iowa's top 10 scoring defense or they haven't allowed a rushing touchdown. They're going to be like, Iowa? Ohio State only beat Iowa by 10? So I'm sure he's going to have, Coach Meyer is going to have his foot on the gas.
And one of those players that we look to, Dontre Wilson, we've talked about him a little bit on the show. We've talked about where he could fill in that hybrid role. But this week, Urban Meyer's saying he's a little bit of novelty at this point. He's making the adjustment from running back in high school to that hybrid receiver role. We got a guy on our team in Philly Brown that's done that, and it took about a year to adjust to it. But if you can add Dontre Wilson into the mix as more than a novelty, could you imagine if he's running the football a little bit more and Jordan Hall's running the football well and healthy a little bit more? You look back to like the Ron Barber or the Tiki Barber and Ron Dane days, Thunder and Lightning in New York. For the Giants, I'd love to see that for Ohio State.
It would be really, really cool to see again. I would be really excited about that. It sounds like Coach Meyer loves how hard the Dontre works. And apparently in practice, he's just really performing exactly how Coach Meyer is expecting him to. I think it's when he starts exceeding expectations and putting on some weight. He definitely looks young out there. He doesn't look like he's, you know, he's trepidatious about anything. It definitely looks like he needs some work on some of the bigger fundamentals, so not the actual running the football, but things like blocking. And, again, Percy Harvin's name got thrown out there in the press conference this week, which makes me want to gag, but he definitely is going to have to start adapting to the offense.
There's three names that you always hear.
Yes.
Percy Harvin?
Yep.
Tim Tebow.
Yep.
Chris Leak.
Yep.
And
I think he just said Tim and Chris at the press conference this last week.
And
may have mentioned all three names.
Urban Meyer, you might want to stay away from that because not only Claire's after you, Ken's after you. I mean, everybody on our site's after you about it. I don't really have a problem with it because when you look at what Percy Harvin did. But I can see where people are saying, hey, we'd like our Ohio State version of that.
Okay, so speaking of Tim Tebow, not to go completely off track here, but I kind of alluded to it too, and I was surprised when they talked about it in the press conference on Monday, that Coach Meyer's never had a 1,000-yard rusher before he came to Ohio State. And, well, I should say a 1,000-yard running back to have 1,000 yards. And he was like, man, I get sick of hearing that, and kind of giving his guys a hard time. And he said, well, you have had 1,000-yard rushing quarterbacks before. And he said, I can leave my press conferences like the other guys, you know. But really, he said, no, just one. And it was Braxton. Braxton is the only – and, you know, you think Tim Tebow is just this running quarterback and all the things he did and all the hype behind Tim Tebow. He still didn't get to where Braxton got.
It's going to be interesting. I don't think Hyde can get to it this year either.
I don't think so, with missing those games.
He's
on track to do it. But.
He's definitely on track to do it. He's got 48 carries, 294 yards, a 6-yard average, and 3 touchdowns already. I think that he could get close.
He can get close, but like you said, it's not always going to be such an unbalanced attack. I mean, the only reason we don't have to rely on our run game this year, so it's not going to be as necessary. If we were a run-heavy team all the time, then maybe it would be possible. And with him missing the games, it would just be really tough to do. But obviously, I'd love to see it. That'd be great.
My brain's frozen. I just realized that the quote-unquote greatest player in college football never had a 1,000-yard rushing season.
Yeah, right? Did I just ninja your brain?
Oh, man. And we got Tim Tebow in the podcast. Man, we're doing good things today.
Right. Somehow, some way.
Well, Iowa is the team that we'll take on. It's 3:30 Saturday, a team that has had some tough losses this season. Northern Illinois sticks out, but a team that's really going to battle defensively, we talked about a little bit. They bring out a very tough defensive line. Their linebackers are good. Again, a second straight opponent, we face a secondary that's kind of questionable. So opening up that playbook might be key to winning. And I think really right now one of the keys offensively still to me is Philly Brown and the way he's playing.
Philly Brown is lights out. He really is a stud. Devin Smith, I will always love for his circus catches that he can make and unbelievable plays, but he's still not completely consistent, and he's definitely not Braxton's favorite target. And you can just tell Braxton and Philly can just zero in on each other, and Philly just is so clutch.
Already on the season, he's already to the halfway point of receptions that he had last year. He's already at 381 yards. Last year he had 669. He's averaging about 2 yards more per catch, and he has 2 more touchdowns already than last season. That's something that I think really needed to be talked about with this offense, is finding that consistency, and it starts with him. At home, he has 19 receptions on the season, 219 yards, and 11.5 average. 4 of those 5 touchdowns.
Wow. I have no doubt. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. He's going to be clutch. It's going to be key to get him involved. And I know from a very credible source that he is a favorite target for a reason, and it's because his leadership and his ability to just make plays come out of nowhere.
Do you think he feels, not necessarily this year, but in his past, and a little bit disrespected?
No, but, I mean, it's good if he feels like he has a chip on his shoulder. That's good. That's what we had with Carlos. So if he has a chip on his shoulder and he feels like he has something to prove, that's the whole motto behind this team this year. They better have a chip on their shoulder. They better feel like there's something to prove. I don't feel like he's been disrespected, but, again, we're not Philly, so we don't know.
Exactly. We need to quit doing that, huh?
Right? We want to be in that locker room so badly, don't we, Joe?
Yeah, that's the problem right there. How about the plays of the tight ends in this game? If we're going to see a lot of running game from Carlos Hyde, those tight ends are key, and I think they played really well this season. The numbers don't necessarily say it, but I still think that they played extremely well.
You know, when you don't see receiving yards, I think maybe that's why, but so much of that stuff is done in the trenches, especially on these option plays. The tight ends are so important. And they run the options just better than anybody else in the country, I think. But do we have Vinette or Heuerman at number one right now?
I believe Heuerman's the number one.
Number one, okay. I know they were both getting involved at some point, but.
Hey, like I said earlier, my game plan, I hope both are in at the same time.
Yeah, right? That'd be fun.
Let's play some Stanford ball. Maybe throw 3-4, maybe even put the quarterback up at tight end. I mean, whatever it takes to beat Iowa, which brings up my most important question of the week, Claire. Is there a more ugly uniform in college football than Iowa?
No.
Ugh.
No. No. At one point, Maryland had some pretty ugly uniforms. Oregon with their fighting highlighters sometimes. But the Iowa uniforms, God.
I feel like we're still playing football in, like, 1862. And every time we play, I understand a classy uniform. Ohio State has a classy uniform. Penn State has a classy uniform. the team up north, well, whatever. But
don't, yeah.
This uniform is ugly.
It's really hideous.
It hasn't changed.
It's really bad. And I'm like you. Like, I like a classic uniform, like Penn State. And this is the other thing I was going to ask the other day, and I just noticed, and again, forgive me for being on a tangent, but when did Penn State start putting the names on the back of their jerseys?
I think they started doing that last year.
Okay. I'm not a big fan of that, especially since that was their tradition not to, but sorry, side note. I was just kind of curious.
It is kind of strange.
Classic, traditional, because college football is so rooted in tradition, and it's fun with Nike and Under Armour. That's why those two are battling each other with uniform craziness. Maryland is Under Armour Central, and Eugene is Nike Central, so they're going to try to one-up each other with who has an uglier, flashier uniform.
And then you got Arizona State putting flames on their helmets. I don't know where it's going. Maybe I'm getting old. Maybe that's part of the problem.
No.
But I will be the first to admit, and I've done it before on the website, and don't think I'm crazy for this, but the Maryland uniforms are awesome.
You think so?
Maybe it's just, I just love the state flag on the helmet. As ugly as it is, it's pretty cool.
It really is.
Those colors don't mesh well. I don't think if Maryland understood that when they put together their state flag, those colors just don't go well together.
Or Maryland.
Hey, they're coming to the Big Ten. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right.
I hope so. I hope they're ready.
It's going to be a challenge.
Better be ready to step it up is what they better be, because Big Ten needs to grow, is what we'll say. Grow. I'm not bashing the Big Ten, but they need to start stepping it up a notch.
Grow some talent? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's better.
Well, that begs the question. We talked about it on the website and brought it up before. Ohio State undefeated. They get a win here against Iowa. They keep that record going. And they've beaten Iowa 12 of the last 13 years. They'll keep that streak going. They've got a home winning streak going as well. But the question really, you're looking outside of this ball game, which is always the detriment of the fan, is,
yeah,
is Ohio State in the national championship race? That's the question.
It's the detriment of the fan, but it's the luxury of the fan. You know, you don't ever want to see the coaches looking past or the players looking past. Their job to focus on that game directly ahead of them, and you always hear the media and the fans ask about games in the future, especially when it hits November. But really, it's a luxury to be able to do that, and it's kind of fun. It's what we get to do, and you and I get to sit and talk about it. I think so. I honestly do. And not just from a fan's perspective, but knowing what's ahead of them, it's completely possible. The problem is how everything is structured. And I think I mentioned it the other day on the blog, but I really believe, I don't think that a one-loss team is going to usurp an undefeated Ohio State team. And I don't think strength of schedule will technically come into play there, because the teams that we scheduled could have very well have been higher ranked. You know how far out these schedules are made. But it's about money. It really is. It's about money with the BCS, and it's about money with the bowl games. And Ohio State fans travel better than any fans across the nation. You saw what happened at Cal, even Northwestern. Half of Northwestern Stadium, and this is a fellow Big Ten team, half of Northwestern Stadium was filled with Buckeyes that have come from everywhere. So, honestly, they fill up the hotels, they fill up the restaurants. It's good for the economies down there. I know that Ohio State, if it's possible, these bowl committees love putting Ohio State into these bowls for the money reasons.
Now, before we let you go, the question has to be then, does the playoff selection committee put that in the back of their heads? Is that's why these political names are on there, right? So Ohio State gets a chance for four games in.
Right. We have some Ohio State ties in there. It's possible. And like I said, they're human. They're going to have opinions, and it's not always going to be based on fact.
She's Claire Crawford. Check out her work, thebuckeyebattlecry.com. As always, with us on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, Saturday, 3:30 against Iowa. Claire, enjoy the game. I'm sure we'll see you in the live chat.
I am so excited. Thank you, Joe.
After 45 minutes, there's no doubt she's the talent of the show. That's why she gets paid the big talent fee. It's called 0.00. More to come on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. We'll talk to Steve Patterson with the Quad City Times and break down this Iowa Hawkeye team. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to this squad. Are they improved? Are they as good as their record says? And can they be in the hunt for the Big Ten championship game, not only this year, but for years to come, with Kirk Ferentz as the head coach? We'll ask that and more with Steve Patterson of the Quad City Times when we come back on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. BuckeyeRoom.com is your number one stop for Ohio State swag. From men's and ladies' apparel to hats, autographed apparel, and the best in scarlet and gray game day jerseys. BuckeyeRoom.com, featuring the deal of the day right on our homepage at thebuckeyebattlecry.com. BuckeyeRoom.com, the best place for Buckeye hats, clothing, and apparel.
Inspiring city and campus. Inspiring people. Inspiring creativity. Inspiring hands-on learning. Inspiring global experiences. Inspiring traditions. Be a Buckeye. Inspire.
It's the BBC. Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Go Buck.
It's the BBC. Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle
Go
Cry.
Go Buck.
It's the BBC.
This is Mecca Dawn. You are listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Peace.
Never running from the mission. On the heat up in the kitchen. See the light, we got a vision. On the ladder, escalator. On a mission to be greater. To the top is where we going. We don't care about a hater.
Slow it down for a second. Actually, let's not, cause we might give him a chance to catch up. So let's go to the top.
The show where Scarlet and Gray is the only game in town. Welcome back to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour.
Welcome back to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. As Ohio State gets ready to take on Iowa 3:30 on Saturday, we're joined with Steve Patterson. The website is hawkmania.com with the Quad City Times. Steve, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Always a great matchup between Iowa and Ohio State. This year, it seems the story is the battle of a dynamic offense against a very good and talented rush defense.
Yeah, no question. It's going to be a test for both defenses, both offenses, I think, to kind of move the ball. Iowa has been pretty effective against the run, as Ohio State certainly has. And it's another of those tests that you kind of expect to see when you get into Big Ten play. And, you know, with five rush defenses in the top ten in the country in this conference, it's going to be like this every Saturday.
Well, what makes Iowa's rush defense so special? It seems to be the linebacking play has really stepped up so far this year.
Yeah, you've got three senior linebackers in Christian Kirksey and James Morris and Anthony Hitchens, an Ohio guy, that our seniors, they're veteran. They were expected to kind of be the heart of this defense, and that's proven to be the case. I think the biggest area of growth has probably been up front. Reese Morgan, who was the coach of Iowa's offensive line for about a decade, moved over to the defensive side a year ago, and worked with a very young group of defensive linemen at that time, and it's a situation where some of those guys, there's only one senior in the lineup in Dom Alves at an end spot, but it's a group that has some experience now. They rotated eight or nine guys last year on a pretty regular basis. went through some growing pains, and that was one of Iowa's struggles last year, was on the defensive front. And but this is a group that is kind of maturing at this point. It's been pretty tough on the inside. Louis Trinka-Passat is a Chicago Public League kid who comes with a little bit of that Chicago edge on him. And Carl Davis is a Michigan kid that has kind of grown and arrived at Iowa with some pretty lofty expectations and has finally grown into a starting role. They've done a good job of bottling people up inside and working and tying up those linemen, which allows the linebackers to make plays, and that's making everything work.
The Hawkeyes have already matched their win total from last season, a much improved team, as we talked about already, and on defense, a big part of it. How much of it has been the big play from the linebackers just setting up a big play?
No question. When you take a look at James Morris, you've got an academic All-Big Ten pick, a very smart kid. He's a fourth-year starter, started as a true freshman, has really grown into the position, and he's a quarterback of that defense. There's no question about that, but you know, Hitchens is kind of in a position where within their alignment, he's going to be making quite a few plays, and Anthony certainly has done that this season, and it's been kind of a group effort. And I mean, where one guy or maybe the other will be a little more in the forefront in a certain game, but it's kind of pick your poison there. They're all pretty good. They're all pretty athletic and all pretty active, and they all play a pretty heady game too, which has helped. I mean, if Iowa has some holes, it's probably on the back end of the defense, but that front has been stout enough so far to get this team 4 wins.
How important is it for this Iowa team to have some balance as we talk defensively and move to the offensive side of the ball? We've seen them be able to do that a little bit. Mark Weissman, of course, everybody knows about him. But offensively, it seems like this Iowa team has been able to get balance at times this season.
That's been the key, and that was the one thing that didn't work in their most recent game against Michigan State. You take a look at what Iowa has done offensively, and they've been successful running the ball, certainly with Mark Weissman and using Damon Bullock almost as a second starter there, whether he lines up at the tailback or they'll slip him out to a slot receiver at times. He's been pretty effective as well. And you put those two with a combination of a young quarterback who has stepped in and shown some pretty good poise in Jake Rudock, and it's been a pretty balanced attack. And Michigan State got Iowa out of whack by loading the box, denying the run. Weissman got hurt fairly early in that game, suffered a foot injury. He'll be back this week, should be 100%. It wasn't anything too serious, but it really took Iowa out of its rhythm. And Rudock has done a really good job of managing games, and he's a kid out of St. Thomas Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale, one of the premier high school programs in the country. He's actually played at the SHU before as a junior in high school in a non-conference game. And he's a kid that won a three-way battle, and it's been pretty easy to see why. He's pretty unflappable, he's given that offense a chance to work. He spread the ball around to 17 different receivers for 6 games, and it's been a collective effort. And when Iowa's been at its best, it's been able to pass and run.
He's Steve Batterson joining us, the Quad City Times, as well as the website hawkmania.com. One thing that I noticed you wrote about your 10 things yesterday is that he mentioned being on the road as not really that too much of a thing that quarterbacks think about, especially considering it's part of the game. Going to Ohio Stadium won't shake a Big Ten quarterback.
It shouldn't. And Jake has been the kind of guy that certainly has shown to be pretty unflappable in tough situations. Iowa played their 2 road games so far have been at Iowa State, which is a similarly hostile environment. Not a lot of love when the Hawkeyes show up in Ames, and that was followed by a trip to Minneapolis. The situation there pretty much the same. The crowd may be a little tamer in the Twin Cities than it was in Ames, but this is obviously a different beast. I mean, this is one of the loudest stadiums that they will have played in. It certainly will be a different type of test, but Rudock, I think, is the type of kid that seems to just deal with stuff, and I don't see that being a huge factor. His biggest concern is going to be, those bodies lined up on the other side of the line.
He's got some pretty good receiving talent, though, there, too, to help him out.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevante Martin Manley has been the most consistent receiver. He certainly was the most experienced guy coming into this year. He's been kind of the safety valve, if you will, through six games. He's been the top target, and as one might expect. And he suffered a little bit of a hip or an upper thigh kind of injury in the Michigan State game, and actually came out. But he is expected back on Saturday as well. You take a look at him. He's a good, reliable receiver. What they've got around him this year, they've got a little more speed, and it's another Ohio kid, actually. Damon Powell is a junior college transfer from Snow College in Utah, but he actually went to high school in Toledo. And he brings something in the Iowa offense that they haven't had in a long time. He brings a real speed threat at the receiver position. And he's averaging around 30 yards a catch, or 34, I think it is right now, 34 and change. Which is nothing new. He actually led the junior college ranks last year nationally with an average of 30 yards per reception. He arrived on campus in August. He's still kind of learning the offense, but he's a guy that over the second half of the season they're counting on to become a little more familiar with what's going on out there, that they'll be able to go to a little more frequently within the structure of the offense. And he's a high-energy guy, and he has that ability to make people miss following a reception and create something out of nothing. And he's a guy at number 22 that people are going to have to keep an eye on.
Steve Batterson joining us with Quad City Times and HawkMania.com, helping us break down the Hawkeyes. Let's talk the rushing game. Everyone knows Mark Weissman and Damian Bullock, too. Both the guys have been around the program for a while. Let's start with Weissman. Started as a second-string fullback, worked his way in due to injuries, and he's really picked up that Iowa type of feel when you look at a running back. It reminds me a lot of Sean Green, just like a guy that has enough speed to burst but also has enough strength to get through the pile.
Yeah, he really is a great combo back in those terms. He's one of those kids, he's kind of a tough-minded kid that is smart enough to find ways to get that extra yard or two that all the good backs do. And he's a kid that, just has continued to produce no matter, who he's been out there against. When healthy, he's been a very, effective threat in this offense. And it doesn't really seem to matter who he's gone against. He's been able to get to, that 100-yard marker. As I indicated earlier, he did come out of the Michigan State game with a foot injury, ended up with a total of 9 yards on seven carries, and there just was no burst there that day. But all indications are that he should be at least fairly close to normal. He dealt with some injuries last year, and his season kind of came and went with his health. And he's a back that stepped in kind of a crisis situation last year when Iowa had lost three guys in the first couple of games, and stepped in and they found a tailback in a fullback's body, and he brings that mindset to the game.
What can Ohio State fans expect from Damon Bullock, a guy that has rushed 65 times this season?
He's playing his best football right now. There's no question about that. And Bullock is a guy who, not unlike another one of the backups, Jordan Canzeri, has dealt with a lot of injuries during his career. It appears that he's finally healthy. He is a kid that has both tailback and receiver type skills. And one of the things that Greg Davis, the offensive coordinator, is trying to do with him is find ways to get him involved in the offense. And he's actually lined up at tailback. He's lined up at fullback. He's lined up at a slot receiver this year. They've used him in a variety of ways. And he's a pretty versatile kid and a pretty potent producer in terms of being able to just kind of effectively run what they're trying to do offensively. They've got a lot of pieces to the puzzle that they can kind of move around within this offense, and he's one of the keys there.
Steve Batterson joining us, Quad City Times and HawkMania.com, as we break down the Iowa Hawkeyes. The question everybody around the country asks is always about Kirk Ferentz. Your thoughts on Coach and what he's done so far this season?
You know what, Kirk, I think, is kind of comfortable with his team, and he has been since summer. He's had kind of a you know, an easy demeanor about him with this group. And I think he likes the way that they've worked. I think he's, you know, this is his 15th season. They've obviously had a number of staff changes over the past 2 years, from changing both coordinators a year ago when Norm Parker retired on the defensive side. Phil Parker was promoted from within, and the offensive coordinator, Ken O'Keefe, left for the Dolphins and was replaced by Greg Davis, whose most previous employment was at Texas on Matt Brown's staff in the same role down there. And what you've got is you had a year of transition a year ago. There were also a couple of other assistant coaches changed positions within the staff structure that led to some inconsistency, and I think probably a little more of a disruption than maybe they even anticipated. That factored into Iowa's record a year ago, along with a very young football team. Last year's team was the youngest team that Kirk had fielded since he's been at Iowa. And, you know, the combination of new terminology, new coaches, and new players was not a winning one for Iowa by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, Kirk has had a couple of ups and downs during his time in Iowa City, and he's always seemed to find a way to kind of get things turned around. And I think just sensing his demeanor this year that he feels comfortable with the direction that things are heading and with the personnel that Iowa has in place.
For this coaching staff and for Coach Ferentz, how important is it recruiting outside of the state of Iowa? You look at all the star players, quote-unquote, on offense. Weissman's from Illinois, Bullock's from Texas, Rudock's from Florida, Powell's from Ohio, Manley's from Pontiac, Michigan. There's a lot of recruiting that has to take place outside of the state.
Yeah, no question. Iowa is the type of state that, you know, on average will probably produce somewhere around 10 Division I, top-level Division I type players in a good year. And when you consider that both Iowa and Iowa State are fighting over that talent, it becomes a chore. And Iowa's success traditionally has relied on being able to go out and find particularly skill kids outside of the state to make things work. And, you know, it's been a situation, I think, in you know, the most recent years where with new staff members, guys are kind of settling into new territories in terms of recruiting and that type of thing. But, you know, the Chicago area has always been important for the Iowa program in terms of recruiting. They've hit Ohio much harder the past couple of years than what they have in the past. There are five guys in the two deep right now who played at Ohio high schools. And, you know, that doesn't include guys like Powell, who's not on the depth chart at this point. But, you know, Michigan, basically your Big Ten footprint is where Iowa looks for players. And they will go south, probably more so to Texas now with Greg Davis and his ties. Bobby Kennedy, a first-year receivers coach, is also a former Longhorns assistant. So I think they're looking a little more in that direction now than maybe what they have. Probably really since Hayden Fry and some of his assistants moved on back in the late 90s.
Coach Urban Meyer of the Ohio State Buckeyes made it clear this isn't a trap game. This is a battle of two teams that are pretty talented in this conference. As you look at points against for Iowa, 16.8 points per game from their opponents. They're 32nd in the country in rushing yards. A very good team, Steve. And what will it take for Iowa to be able to be in this game and to try and keep it close to possibly pull out a victory?
Well, I think the big thing for Iowa will come in the first quarter. I mean, Ohio State's starts have obviously been pretty well documented and how you know, effective they've been in terms of you know, being able to pile up a pretty good lead early. And Iowa has had a tendency at times to be a fairly slow starting team. They've done a decent job in the second quarter of kind of turning those numbers around, but they've been a little slow out of the gates, and that's something they certainly cannot afford on Saturday at all. They're going to have to be sharp. They're going to have to be on top of their game, and you know they're going to have to bring it. This is a game I think Iowa's been pointing to as well as kind of a coming out party, if for no other reason that they need something to hang their hat on. And You know, the win at Minnesota was nice, but Minnesota is still a very young football team and a developing team. And, you know, Iowa, I think, feels like that they are in a situation where, you know, if they want to move up the ladder in their division, they need to start piling up some wins here. And the schedule is not going to get any kinder the next 2 weeks with Northwestern and Wisconsin looming right after the Buckeyes. So, you know, it's one of those games that you probably try to hang around until the fourth quarter and then do what you can to make some plays.
He's Steve Batterson. You can find his work in the Quad City Times. Check out the great website, hawkmania.com, where Steve does work all the time. Keep him busy. Steve, thanks for your time, and enjoy the game on Saturday.
You bet. Take care.
He's Steve Batterson. You can find his great work at the website, hawkmania.com, and in the Quad City Times. Make sure you follow Steve on Twitter as well, at SBAT, that's with two T's, 79, at SBAT. 79. Great work from Steve. Glad to have him on the program and glad for another great game of football coming up this Saturday, 3:30 p.m. It's Ohio State hosting Iowa in Big Ten play. Don't let last week fool you. This is an Iowa team that is back to Iowa-type football where they're going to compete quarter after quarter and they're not going to let up. And I like to see that back from the Hawkeye program. You know another program that never gives up? The BuckeyeBattleCry.com. Hey, we might not be the best. We compete every single week. We got some great coverage this week. We preview Iowa. Ken's got that article up, as well as the Wednesday Night Rumble and much, much more at the BuckeyeBattleCry.com as we get you ready for kickoff against Iowa. Make sure you join us a half an hour before kickoff for the live chat right at the BuckeyeBattleCry.com. That's going to do it for the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. I want to thank Steve Batterson of the Quad City Times and HawkMania.com one last time, as well as you for listening. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. And for more, visit TheBuckeyeBattleCry.com. Thanks for listening. Go Buckeyes!
For more on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, visit iTunes or check out our media page. For more Buckeye news and notes, visit www.thebuckeyebattlecry.com.